The greatest argument to the scepticism, antagonism, and indifference to the needs of the whole African nation is found in the words of Philip to Nathaniel, "Come and see." These are some of the very first pictures I ever took on African soil, almost 20 years ago. And I was shocked to the very core of my being that there were Christian families living in such circumstances. If these children, within a church compound and in a Christian environment, were living in such conditions, how did they fare who were living in the forest, the rainforest, and in conditions that could only be described as prehistoric? "Come and see," said Philip to Nathaniel, "and in the light of what your eyes behold, make your decision." It is by way of this presentation that I invite you now to come and see, for the cause is still as pressing, and the spiritual need just as great. Come then with me, and see first of all, child rescue, making a difference in so many ways. Where we work, in the semi-arid region of eastern Kenya, rainfall is only a visitor, an infrequent and irregular visitor. And in those times when it does visit, it brings both havoc and hope, delight and disruption. The surface water accumulates, and in minutes, literally minutes, transport and travel are brought to a complete standstill. Some make it over in the shallows, if they are in a hurry, and think nothing of wet feet. Some press on with engine revving, and are able to continue their journey. But some are caught out, and are fortunate enough to have help in hand to push or pull them clear before the next shower carries them away, for this often happens with tragic and fatal consequences. But however much a disruption now, it is this same red tide that provides our people with subterranean vaults of liquid benevolence before it disappears on its inexorable journey to the Indian Ocean. This same untamed natural resource, filtering through the parched sand and gravel, lies waiting to provide its life-giving properties and to enable the populace to survive through the long months of drought until the next rain. The longer the drought, the deeper the well. This crop may not look much to us, but these few greens, well protected from the animals by thorns, will help them through. It is not a feast by any means, but at least it will lessen the famine, and for that they are thankful. Nothing here is wasted, especially water, and even the puddles are utilized, a shrinking, muddy testimony to the preciousness of water. Note the jerrycan is being filled to the very brim, tilted over even, to enable these last few drops to be poured. This jerrycan is for the animals, and this other one is for the household. Not much difference, you might think. But what may serve the community cannot serve our purposes in child rescue work. We could not survive on this local source, even if it was in plentiful supply. For it is water such as this that accounts for so many infant deaths and so much sickness and disease among the population. These two large holding tanks of concrete and steel are necessary for our purpose. For here we can hold 500,000 liters of clean, fresh rainwater. Our method of water harvesting is one that out of necessity I devised myself in order to maximize the effectiveness of our roof catchment We used 20-foot lengths of 4-inch plastic pipe, rather than the short metal gutter with their propensity to leak at every joint. Cut carefully in one side, it is then ready for our purpose. Pushed to the edge of the corrugated iron and fastened with wire, this forms a waterway that has only one joint every 20 feet and is virtually leak-proof. We paint them white to reduce sun damage, and thus we provide a safe and hygienic supply of rainwater for our reservoirs. By this means, we can harvest and hold 1 year's supply of clean water in just 4 hours' rainfall. It would be hard to imagine a greater contrast between these two sources of the same commodity. Our foodstuff, of course, is the one single major purchase that must be on hand and available at all times and seasons. And on those days when our supplies are being brought in, we are never short of help to transfer it from the vehicle to the storerooms. Sometimes too much help, so eager are they to participate. We are thankful for the blessings of good buildings adjacent to our kitchen, where every item has its own place, and our cooks have always access to a bountiful supply from which to create a weekly menu. With around 130 children at present to care for, we can make our way through prodigious amounts of foodstuffs per month. For instance, each month we use almost 500 kilos, nearly 1 ton of these maize grains. The same quantity is used of these beans, extremely nutritious and satisfying, but also very expensive. 30 bales of milled maize flour are also used. With 200 kgs of sugar, plus 200 kgs of rice, and these are only our staples. We have meat twice per week, which we feel important to provide, plus vegetables, and the host of other items that go to provide a reasonable and necessary provision for growing children. With so many to cook for, we need a man for some of the heavier duties. The making of this ugali is an example. This is ground maize flour, and to us it may appear and taste rather bland. But without it, neither our staff nor our children would feel satisfied. We try to provide a balanced diet. We even have a vegetarian menu for some. For in all our dealings with them, we treat our orphans as we would our own. In this way, we seek to prevent any child being overlooked and their needs and personal requirements being slighted or treated with indifference. Our childcare puts the happiness of the child as paramount. And what better way to begin than to begin at the table, which for most, if not all of them, is a new and wonderful experience. Thirty-five miles away is our nearest township, called Mwingi. It is not much to look at, has few amenities, and on market days can be a jostling mass of people. But apart from these things, it is an extremely significant town, for it services an outer edge of Kenya's eastern reaches. To us, it is even more important, since we have so many which depend on its wares. It is from this town that we clothe our children, for beyond the wild and dusty frontier appearance, there is an amazing abundance of all things needful. From these little dukas or shops, we jostle and bargain and pick and choose until we find what we want. It may be bed sheets, trouser material, shirt material, blouse or shirt fabric, nightshirts or slips. Whatever it is, from these shops, our purchase ends up in our workshop, where it is crafted into a tasteful and well-made article of clothing. Here in our sewing shop, the old and the new are combined. These machines, mostly cheap, mass-produced imitations of real sewing technology, cost around £40, but they give surprisingly good service for all that. The power to drive them is plain old-fashioned manpower, or in this instance, woman power. But in the hands of the right person, these machines can do the job. Quietly and efficiently, the ongoing work of the sewing shop keeps our children well clothed. This raw material in the right hands can bring the desired results and provide us with a supply of ready-to-wear garments for all age groups. A charcoal iron provides the desired smoothness, or alternatively, can put a crease just where needed. So it is, by very simple tools, our purchase from the material shop eventually provides the children with attractive and well-made garments. Some of our older girls have an interest in dressmaking, and we encourage them towards this vocation. This is a skill that is extremely useful, as it can be carried on from the marriage home and still give the mother time and opportunity for household responsibilities. Since it is inevitable that our children return to the local culture and environment, they must be prepared to meet that challenge, and we make sure that they can master the processes involved. It had just rained the previous evening, and the soft ground was just right for our Saturday morning beginners agricultural course. As the plough came past each time, a new volunteer took the seed bowl. This is their only physical hope of a future livelihood, and so we prepare them well for the day when they must go forth and fend for themselves. The other side of the farming coin, of course, is home economics. And here it is experienced rather than taught. Preparing for special occasions, such as Christmas, provides us with a plentiful supply of teachers and pupils. These occasions are worth more than all the theory we could teach. This is a school of experience, and there is no school better than that. Our boys and girls revel in such activity and are always anxious to participate, even though this is a painstaking and slow process. But through this enjoyable and voluntary distraction, they are learning all they need to know for survival in the outside world, their outside world. Whatever it is, however mundane it may appear, the children are encouraged to participate willingly, for their adult life will be one of labour and toil. And we must say that we are indeed proud of their response. Nothing is too much trouble, and they delight in being allowed to help us. Some of the children develop specific interests arising from their own ingenuity. And, all told, considering the complete lack of tools and materials, this is a commendable attempt at bodybuilding. The smaller children, just like their counterparts all over the world, play at being adults, building little houses out of mud and roofing them with whatever materials are available, just like in real life. They plant gardens and seeds and spend hours at this play, and so by a natural process are preparing themselves for adulthood and parenthood. They are fond of sport and are amazingly versatile in their sporting achievements. There are no Olympic medals for this, of course, but I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever that any one of them could be a medalist if circumstances were different for them. I do know this, that their example in so many things could raise the bar for many in their own land. All our little ones attend school, a local school, just 500 yards away. Here they are very well catered for and have integrated well with the local children. They more than hold their own academically and are above average in their studies.
Danlop is Tola. Let me say that.
Danlop is Tola.
Zanimekia.
Zanimekia.
Thank you. Yeah, that is good. Yes, I am. 3 times 3 is 9. It's equal to 9. Very good.
The head teacher Daniel, seen here talking to our new helpers in the work, John and Yvonne Murray, has been a faithful and supportive friend to our whole children's program and has made life so much easier for us in that regard. But while all the foregoing makes us very happy and gives us great satisfaction, the greatest satisfaction for us is found on the Lord's Day. The children are here assembling in their age groups for our church parade. Twice each Lord's Day, we come together with joy and gladness to hear the word of the Lord and to participate in thanksgiving for all his goodness to us. And even though we assemble twice each Lord's Day, the assembly line still takes a little organization to get it right. Finally, the children are ready to proceed. In the Sunday service, but all our work is seen in its evident manifestation. Nourishing food, a settled environment, proper clothing, our love for the children and theirs to us, all comes together for us in our Sunday services. If a missionary may be permitted to use the phrase, then this is our crowning moment. This is our greatest joy. This is our ultimate reward. All else has been to this end, and to this end alone, to reach them with the gospel of everlasting salvation. Our services, we have no entertainment approach, no gimmicks or quirky evangelistic techniques so popular with many today. There can be nothing entertaining in presenting the sinner's lost estate before God. There can be nothing entertaining about the work of Christ on the cross. And great plainness of speech, we believe, is the key to biblical evangelism.
and girls, I want to speak to you this morning from Genesis. And the chapter 3. God made coats of skins, and he clothed Adam and Eve with these coats of skins. We cannot get the skin from an animal without slaughtering the animal. And here on the very first page of the Bible, we find that in order to cover the sin of Adam and Eve, something had to die. And we cannot cover our sin without the death of Christ. Because this story of Adam and Eve in the garden brings us to the gospel story. God's covering was provided on the cross of Calvary. What hill did Christ die on?
The word of God is sufficient. And if that fails, then nothing we can add can improve it or bring about salvation.
Golgotha, good for you. Good for you. I learned one thing particularly, that I was a sinner, and that God loved me, and that he sent his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, to die for me on the cross.
Even visitors press home the necessity of the new birth and are encouraged to do so. It is our prayer that salvation will visit our children also and claim them for heaven's own.
Remember that if I died without Christ, not having him in my heart,
then I can go on the
other. I would go to a lost eternity.
These boys and girls have bonded with us, and we count it a privilege to be with them, in their company, and in their fellowship. These children will never forget these years, and when we see them so happy and content and carefree, we are glad all over again that we did come, that we did see, and that we were not disobedient to the vision given us. And now realized in the lives of so many. We have indeed demonstrated under God that child rescue really does make a difference in so many ways. Let me introduce you to another aspect of our work. Come and see also medical aid, a worthy endeavour. It is a beautiful morning in April during the short rains. The bush is verdant green and the cool fresh air is invigorated and gives one a sense of joy just to be alive. It is the kind of morning when one might fill a picnic basket and begin a safari. But our safari this morning has no happy prospects. A 25-year-old has died in childbirth, and we are on our way to pick the body from the mortuary for burial. This particular task is a labour of love to those who have no means to fulfil it for themselves. Transport costs, making it an extremely difficult time for relatives. Finally, from the mortuary, we load our silent passenger and commence the journey to her final resting place. The home is far into the bush, and the road is not good to begin with, and it gets worse. Finally, we must unload all the mourners we picked up on the way, for the extra weight considerably increases the risk of a puncture. As we come near the homestead, we see the bush has been cleared to allow for the truck to pass. This is puncture territory, and so we are being very careful of a sharp, pointed root cleft by a machete. The homestead itself is not more poor than others. In fact, there are thousands worse off than this. Nevertheless, it is pretty basic, to say the least. I quickly unload, and after receiving profuse thanks, I prepare to leave. Just at this moment, the dead woman's other children are pointed out to me and sit for pictures, wondering what is going on around them. The surviving newborn lies blissfully unaware of the tragedy unfolding around it, and perhaps more to the point, of the terrible hardship and poverty that lies before it. On another day, the journey is much shorter, but no less tragic. A 14-year-old dies suddenly in the next village. There is no diagnosis, no post-mortem, and no coffin. The child is simply carried home. Once again, we leave a family with their hunger and pain and bereavement. But our medical work, of course, centers around the living. And it is with the living that our constant daily labor is expended. It may be an old woman who cannot travel to the clinic. Living in Spartan conditions and of a pre-AIDS generation, she enjoys remarkably good health for her years. We visit her, see to her problem, and we are on our way. Another day, it might be an old man, climbing a tree to get some leafy branches for his goats. He falls and needs our assistance. The nurse checks that there are no bones broken. Then she explains to the relatives that hospitalization is unnecessary. The treatment he receives is simple. Something for the pain and something to settle him down. These home visits are occasional only, her work being mainly at the clinic. The visit is relaxed and friendly. We take time to show an interest in what they do. What they make for market and how they manage. We leave behind a sleeping and comfortable patient and a group of very appreciative and satisfied relatives and friends. Here at the Naomi Curran Memorial Clinic, our most busy days are the bi-monthly mother and baby days. They are also the most colourful days, as the mothers take the opportunity to present their children in their very best. For a few hours, it is hectic, as the waiting mothers take their turn for the treatment room. The previous details are compared to the present to monitor the child's progress. Problems are explained, instructions given, and the necessary inoculation administered. These are all FAME babies as they fall into the area of our care. We take our child care seriously, as we do all our work. And if we lose any of these, it is not for want of trying to save them. The climate is harsh, the disappointments many, but faith in God and in the certainty of His call makes it possible. And in the progress of these little lives, we have our reward. To all our faithful supporters, and indeed any who may view this presentation, I say this: the value of our medical aid is surely seen in the health and contentment these infants enjoy. And in seeing this success so evidently set forth, let us enter anew into the work. Let us redouble our efforts, our prayers, and our zeal. Here in this rugged outback, we are on the cutting edge of traditional and historic mission work. Let us not fail them by withholding from our plenty, for small change with us makes a big change for them. If we all share a little for their sake, it will mean that for them the barrel of meal shall not waste, and their cruse of oil shall not fail.